and proceed to the third case of the day, 11-2085, in the matter of River West Plaza. For the appellant, Mr. Zadakis, am I pronouncing it? Is that close?
You don't want to call me Mr. Zadakis.
Okay. All right. Proceed.
May it please this Court, Judge Tinder, Judge Magnuson, Judge Bauer, Counsel. Let me first go into whether or not Schwab has an enforceable claim, because if he doesn't have an enforceable claim, then everything after that is moot. There's not much for your honors here to decide. If parties intend they have a contract, no matter how defective the contract is, it is not for this court, the district court, or the bankruptcy court to question it. They do have a contract here. How do we know that? Well, for one thing, Schwab did get a distribution of profits from River West. Why would he have gotten a distribution of profits from the company if he didn't have an enforceable interest? The other thing he has is he has an agreement where River West is trying to buy out his profit participation interest. And in that agreement, it specifically states, you had this agreement with our predecessor, Zale, but we, the new company, River West, are assuming those obligations. We're not only assuming those obligations, we want to buy them out. Your Honors will note they are not looking to buy Schwab out of his membership interest in the company. They're looking to buy him out of his profit participation agreement. Now, we know this as well because when they file their bankruptcy petition, Schwab is not listed as a member of the company. He's not listed as a member of the only place where he is listed anywhere is where he's getting a profit participation for tax purposes only. So he has a valid claim. The next thing is, how do we kick him out? Certainly he gets to file the claim under 501. They give the exceptions. There are only 9 exceptions. If, in fact, we think a claim is defective, then he has an absolute right to amend it. The hurdles aren't very great to file a proof of claim. It's usually a one-page form. It says attach any documents you have. If somebody objects to it, then we have an absolute right to amend that proof of claim to overcome those amendments. That wasn't what was done here. We went in on a hearing. Almost sui sponte, the bankruptcy court decided, well, I've looked at it, and I think it's an equity interest in the company. Now, bankruptcy courts aren't courts of equity, and a lot of this has to do with what powers are we going to give the bankruptcy court? We've amended the bankruptcy court many times. The U.S. Supreme Court has come down over the last several years as to what the powers of the bankruptcy courts are. In both its most recent cases, Travelers and Raleigh, it said there needs to be textual support, and they use that term. Textual support in the bankruptcy code if you are going to disallow a claim. Where is the textual support in the bankruptcy code for disallowing Schwab's claim? There is none. What they'll say is, well, we have the equitable powers to do so. This court has said in In Re Com, no, you don't. Your equity powers, bankruptcy court, extend only to the confines of the bankruptcy code. The bankruptcy courts aren't even Article III courts anymore. Now, Occidental or whatever it was, I guess they were considered such.
They were considered for it.
So, is there a provision in the bankruptcy code that would knock out Schwab's claim on equitable grounds? There is. It's called equitable subordination. And the debtor and the bankruptcy court will tell you, this is what the bankruptcy court did. Well, it didn't. The problem is that the bankruptcy court did not subordinate Schwab's claim. It disallowed it. When you subordinate it, you put it below everything else. It said, you are an equity partner. Your claim is not that of a creditor. The other thing is that
didn't Schwab make the same contention in the state court that he was an equity partner?
Your Honor, what we stated was, for tax purposes, we are a partner for him. We are listed as a partner. But that's really a question of law. We can have a partnership We can partner with somebody, do a development, but does that make us an equity partner? It doesn't, because if we look in the bankruptcy code, they actually have a definition of what an equity security holder is. It's persons who share in the shares of a corporation, shares in a limited partnership, of a limited partnership in a general partnership. An LLC is not even listed under 101.15 or maybe 16 as being an equity security holder. So, and the other thing is, why do we have this provision that says, equity security holder, we're going to disallow your claims? The reason is that these equity people have control over the company, and they can do things with that control that we don't want them to. What they've done in the past, and that's why Congress has amended the bankruptcy code repeatedly, is, well, you know, things don't look so good here. So a year down the line, 2 years down the line, we may be filing for bankruptcy. But guess what? All of our equity in the company is going to be disallowed. The creditors are going to get it. Why don't we convert our equity into secured credit instead? And that's what they've done. And that's why Congress has said, fine, it's not even being an equity security holder that's critical. You need to have control. Because when you have control, then you can do these nefarious things like converting your equity security into secured debt and supposedly putting yourself above your secured creditors. Equitable subordination, if that is what they want to hang their hat on, can only happen if there is a finding that Schwab behaved inequitably in any way. And it's not only inequitably, it has to be inequitably such that other creditors were harmed. Not even the debtor or the bank will make any argument that Schwab behaved inequitably in this situation. Instead, all they've stated is, this is equity, and we think, according to the equitable provisions of the bankruptcy code, they can't cite a provision for that, it should be disallowed. The other thing that the debtor will raise is whether or not we needed to have a stay pending appeal. Now, the bankruptcy code, as your honors know, is yay thick. And why should we not be allowed to rely on the textual support of the bankruptcy code to see whether or not we need a stay? We shouldn't have to make it up like the bankruptcy court did. If you look at 363M, I think it says reversal or modification of an order affecting the validity of a sale. So what it means is, if we want to overturn the sale, we need to have a stay put in place. Why is that? Because we are affecting this is to protect a third-party creditor who purchases in good faith. We want to maximize the value of the bankruptcy estate. To do that, we have to sell things free and clear of any liens or any interest to a third party. So it says if you want to affect the validity of the sale, you need to do it in the bankruptcy court and get you need to get a stay in the bankruptcy court under 363. The problem here is we are not looking to reverse or modify the order of the sale. Why would we? Your Honors, we are happy that they got that amount of money. According to the debtor's position, if a creditor is happy that they're selling the property so the money's coming into the bankruptcy estate and they can get paid off, they should have to post a bond if they're going to contest the validity of the sale. That can't be so. Let me give Your Honors an example.
The sale's not going to take place if the bank walks away with some money but then has to give it back.
The bank doesn't have to give anything back. We escrow money here all the time, Your Honors. Consider a situation where, in fact, they didn't pay $24 million for this property or thereabouts. Let's say I'm a creditor and I see them selling this property, and for whatever reason, Inland decides to overpay $50 million, $100 million, and I'm a creditor. Would I not be a crazy creditor to say, you know what, I'm going to put a stay in there because I don't want them to sell it while I have my claim? No, if I'm a rational creditor, I'm delighted that they're selling the thing at $50 million or $100 million. I want that money to flow into the bankruptcy estate. But why do we say that? Simply, why do we make that synonymous with you can't take that money and hold it in escrow? It's done all the time. I'm happy that the sale took place. We're not looking to reverse it. What we're saying is, fine, hold it until our claims are heard. And if you don't think our claims were legitimate, you should have given us discovery on the issue. And that's what they precluded as well. We don't allow a bankruptcy court, I don't think we allow any courts, to come up with an argument almost sui sponte and say, you know what, I've looked at your documents, and from what I can tell, they're equity. And we say, Your Honor, then let us take the depositions. Because you know what? The intent of the parties is what's going to rule here. Give us the depositions of the members of the company. Let them come forth and tell you that Schwab was an equity security holder of the company. They won't. Schwab won't. There will be no evidence that is presented that will tell you that this person had anything to do with this company other than receiving profits.
When the sale was approved, was the disposition of the proceeds, were you aware of the proposed distribution of the proceeds as well?
We were aware of the plan. Mm-hmm. And that is, of course, one of the problems that we have, in that we don't allow them to evade the provisions of the bankruptcy code by using one section to get around another. If they have a plan and you have secured and unsecured creditors have a lot of rights too, not as much as secured creditors. But if you're going to cram the plan down on the unsecured creditors, then there's a special provision of the bankruptcy code saying, okay, here's what you have to do. That's not what they did. Instead, they used the sale and got them to approve it to make an end run around it. What did the insiders get out of this, Your Honor? If they had a cram-down plan, I guarantee you that the unsecured creditors would all be screaming. The insiders got out of their guarantees for this. Why is that? What happened here is 99% of the proceeds went to one creditor. In exchange for that, the insiders got out of their guarantees. What happened to Schwab is he's left holding the bag at the end of the day, wondering what's happened. This, and there's no allegation that there was any inequitable conduct on his part as well. Your Honor, all we ask is for you simply to say the proceeds go back into the bankruptcy estate where they belong. Let there be a hearing as to whether or not Schwab has an equity interest or any other interest. But we don't get to do it off of the top of our heads and not allow discovery on the issue. That's all we're asking for. It's simply a fair shake at establishing our claim. And I'll save, if I can, the rest of the time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. DeJong?
DeJong.
Thank you.
Dutch. I don't look very much.
Okay.
It pleases the court, Jason DeJonger on behalf of Bank of America. Your Honors, I'm going to be brief today because I don't think the issues before you are overly complex, unfortunately for Mr. Schwab, perhaps. But the primary issue before this court is whether or not the district court was correct in dismissing Mr. Schwab's appeal of the disallowance of his proof of claim. And the district court reached that decision based on the fact that a sale was completed and the assets of the debtor were distributed to its creditors. And despite the fact that Mr. Schwab had notice of those things, Mr. Schwab decided not to take any action to stay that particular sale or to stay the effective confirmation of the plan and implementation of the plan, which resulted in over $24 million being distributed not only to my client, Bank of America, but to a host of other creditors. The plan and the sale and the process that led to the plan and the sale were intertwined. This is not a situation where the sale of the property occurred separate from the plan and the distribution that resulted under that plan. There was a series of long negotiations between the bank, a third party, and the debtor over how those proceeds should be used and who should be paid out of those proceeds, primarily because the bank lent over $26 million to the debtor pre-petition. Part of that lending facility, the bank received a secured claim against all of the assets of the debtor, which would have included any proceeds from the sale of the property. The sale of the property only resulted in approximately $23.8 million being paid to the debtor. At that particular point, there were not enough funds available to pay all of the bank's claim, along with the $300,000 or $400,000 or so in legitimate allowed unsecured claims against the debtor. At that particular point, the debtor came to the bank and said, "Bank, you know, we really want to pay our unsecured creditors." And the bank said, "Well, we're willing to provide sufficient funds. We're willing to carve back a portion of our claim to allow you to pay all of the other unsecured creditors." That was part of the negotiation. That was part of the process that led to this plan the sale of the property and the result here. If there hadn't been that type of an agreement, most likely the bank would have sought stay relief and it would have exercised its rights outside of bankruptcy and would have taken back the property or sold the property, and there would have been nothing for unsecured creditors. So I guess I'm somewhat confused by Mr. Schwab's argument here that the escrow, there should have been an escrow of the funds resulting from the plan, or that something else should have occurred here. What occurred was based on the fact that the bankruptcy court, in addressing objections raised by the debtor and the bank to Mr. Schwab's claim, determined that his right to profits, which is repeated throughout his claim, which is repeated in all of the exhibits to his proof of claim, that he had a right, he had a right to 20% or 25% of the profits resulting from the property. The bankruptcy court concluded, based on our objections, not sua sponte, based on our objections under Section 105 and under Section 502, that the claim should be characterized. It should be considered as equity. And because of the fact that the bank was out of the money for a substantial proportion of its unsecured claim, and the fact that the actual secured claim of the bank was greater than the value of the property, the bankruptcy court concluded that because the claim was at best equity, there was not going to be anything available to pay that claim, and therefore the claim should be disallowed. I would note, by the way, for the benefit of the court, that this property was built for approximately $32 million. $26 million was lent to the debtor by my client, and the debtor's equity put in $6 million to build the property. The property was sold for $23.8 million. It's very hard for us to fathom how there could be any profits related to this particular property, particularly since it only lasted about a year before the debtor was in default under the loan. The loan came due, which precipitated the bankruptcy filing. Your Honors, it's for these reasons that this appeal, that the dismissal of this appeal should be affirmed. There's simply no way for this court or any other court to fashion any kind of remedy to make Mr. Schwab whole. Mr. Schwab should go to another court and pursue his claims against perhaps the owners of River West if he feels that he's been slighted. But it's not for this court or any other court to, at this particular point, 10 months after the sale, 10 months after the payment of distributions, to somehow fashion a remedy for him. Unless the court has any other questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. DeYonker. Mr. Zadakis, anything in reply?
Your Honors, take a look at 101 and 502. Tell me where in those sections it says that a membership interest, even if we go that far, a membership interest in a limited liability company is an equity security holder. It doesn't say that. He made it up. Now, we can say maybe the bankruptcy court should infer that, but that's not for us to say, because Travelers and Rawley said no. You need textual support in the bankruptcy code if you're going to disallow a claim. If Mr. DeYoung has a problem with that, then he needs to go to Congress to amend the code. What he is saying is not there. It was made up. Now, there are profits of the company, is another one of his arguments. Well, anybody who's ever developed anything knows that most of your costs when you're developing a mall like the way this is come up front. I'm spending millions of dollars to build all of these things. I have all of these fixed costs that I've expended. When are the profits of a development going to roll in? The profits of a development aren't going to roll in until at least 3, 4, 5 years later. When these people start paying rent to me, how am I going to earn profits the first year? I'm just trying to cover the nut on the note. It's only after this development gets going and I have tenants in there that are paying me that I'm going to develop profits. So that argument fails as well. Now, 363M, if we read this too, and we say, you are right, Supreme Court, we're going to look literally at the bankruptcy code for textual support, where in there does it say that I need to seek a stay in order to challenge the proceeds that are going to be distributed to the creditors? It doesn't say that. The purpose of this section is simple. It's to protect that third-party creditor out there. who's going to buy something from a bankruptcy estate, and he's going to take it, or she's going to take it, free and clear of any liens. That's it. It protects here inland. It doesn't protect the debtor. It doesn't protect the bank. And again, Your Honors, look at what the situation that his analysis of 363M would lead us to. If they're selling it for more than we think it's worth, and in retrospect, it may have been an awful deal, is he saying a creditor should seek a stay of that sale pending appeal? And what? Post bond? And then if the sale doesn't go through, is the creditor then going to be liable to the debtor or the other creditors because he held up the sale and it didn't go through? We're putting a creditor in an impossible situation. He's already owed money. Are we telling him, honestly, you need to post bond to stop the sale? And guess what? If you're wrong and you mess up the sale and we lose whatever, $25 million, we're coming after you in the end? That's not what the bankruptcy code is all about. If there's any equity...
That red light is all about the end.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, and thank you to both counsel. We'll take that case under advisement as well.